I am Kathy Sutina, and this is The Efficiency Code, your guide to unlocking peak performance in finance and procurement. Listen as we decode the strategies of top industry leaders who are redefining efficiency and optimization. From spend management to lean operations, discover how to achieve more with less. Join us as we crack the code to sustainable growth. My guest today is Carrie Holm. Carrie is a seasoned financial leader with a unique background that spans professional sports and finance. After an impressive career as a professional basketball player, including a season at the WNBA, Carrie transitioned into finance. Super impressive, Carrie. Carrie has over 20 years of accounting experience and brings a wealth of knowledge and leadership to the table. She's been with Torn Consulting for over 8 years, starting as a finance and people ops manager and working her way up through various leadership roles, including VP of finance. Now, as a CFO of Torrent Consulting, Carrie oversees everything from financial reporting and audit preparations to tax compliance. Known for her detail-oriented approach and hands-on leadership style, she's passionate about creating impact with sound financial management. Welcome to the show, Carrie.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks so much for being here. You have such an interesting finance background, you know, going from sports into finance. And I'm sure we're going to get into that as well in through our conversation. But first, let me ask you this. What does sustainable growth mean to you? And how have you applied that as a Torrent CFO?
Yeah, I think for me, sustainable growth means being able to achieve and maintain a continued and long-term rate of growth that you're fueling with operations. So what I mean by that is, like, it has to feed itself, right? To be sustainable, yep. I think it has to be self-fed. And so I think there's a lot of luxury in being privately held. And at Torrent, we are privately held, have always had that luxury of making decisions for the long term that maybe aren't always the best short term. And if you think about, like, just a privately held company, if you are with the right type of leader, which I feel like I have been at Torrent, then it's really honestly just been a privilege. It's very much in the fabric of, I would say, the business at Torrent, because we are a social enterprise trying to make impact and create opportunity. We do that in Guatemala, and, you know, there's just a ton of talent, but there's not a ton of opportunity. And so we've been able to integrate the impact with our business model, and that has just been very fulfilling.
I bet it was. I mean, it's such a difference when you in a private health company versus a public health company, where it feels like, you know, I come from a publicly held companies. It seems like you're always chasing that next quarter versus where in a public, you can really think of that more strategically. And how do we really think of our company and where do we want to be and what type of company, what type of culture that we want to have versus just, you know, the next profit margin that you have to chase, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. So one of the things that when I was looking through your profile, you have spent almost 8 years in Sweden. And I'm really, really curious, when you compare finance function in Sweden versus finance function in the US, are there any differences at all?
Obviously, they were first in with IFRS, and I think, you know, some of the rules and regulations are different, right? But yeah. When I was there, the big thing that struck me, and obviously I was on the payment side a lot. It was early in my career and I was working in payables and receivables. And the thing that struck me so clearly was how far ahead they were on electronic payments.
Wow.
And just all of company to company interaction was so different, felt so much further advanced from what I mean, I'm still picking up checks, right? Like here. And that was like, I mean, the idea of a paper check and what that means and the float, and like, it just didn't exist. And that was years ago in Sweden. So I think that was like one thing that just, I still giggle about it when I deposit a check here. So
that's a great observation. You know, it's funny. Now you kind of unlock this memory in me too. I moved to US in 2003, and I remember that even on the consumer side, for me, myself as a consumer, I have never written a check until I actually came to the US. Everything, even in the late 90s, was very digitized. So finally, like coming here and writing a rent check to my landlord, she was just so foreign to me. It's funny.
Like bizarre.
Yeah. Are there any other things that struck you very differently when you think about Sweden versus US?
From a finance perspective, I mean, I just think that the one thing that always came up, right, is every year I worked for a larger company, and every year as you come into the summertime, right, and in Sweden, you are going on vacation for 4 to 5 weeks and you are taking off, and that's the way it is. And so the larger companies, you know, they're planning for that and they're bringing in their summer interns to fill the role. It's not an idea of how are we going to, like, you know, put all your work onto the next person for the time that you're out on vacation or whatever. Like, that was hugely different. So it's like the summer interns are in, they're taking over the work, like we're helping them get up and going, and then we're piecing out and we're going to be gone for the summer. And, you know, things don't happen at the same rate of pay, the same pace, but everybody's kind of on the same page with that. So it's like coming into the summer, it's almost like we know we're about to go on summer break. So like, hurry up and get everything done that you need to get done, and then we'll see you in August. That was one thing for sure. I also obviously had my boys over there. I had my boys over there. And, you know, just the maternity leave situation in Sweden in particular, but Europe in general, was hugely different. And so that made a big impact on our lives. Part of the reason why we made the decision to have our kids over there, knowing that you're going to have the opportunity to stay home and be with your kids for a year and a half, right? And then head back to work, and that you're guaranteed kind of that work, to be able to step back into your role or an equivalent role, that you're not, you know, putting your career in jeopardy. I think that was hugely impactful for me and for my family to know that I could balance them both a little bit differently. That's not always the case here in the US. I know a lot of young moms that struggle with making choices around how to handle their early years, and what decisions are best for their family. So I'm really grateful that I was able to, you know, to have that part of my career in Sweden.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it also comes down to efficiency too. I think there's a lot, from what I've observed working with European companies, there seem to be really focusing a lot on the efficiencies as well. And this is what this podcast is all about. But let's pivot into your role right now as a CFO of Torrent. When we were prepping for this episode, you told me that you were employee number 40 when you joined the company, and now you're at more than 100 employees at this point. And you were one of the first finance people that actually got recruited. What has been one of the most unexpected challenges that you've encountered when you've been building this finance team? Because I imagine you've had to build basically stuff from scratch.
One of the things that I thought about was just the being able to be flexible enough to grow at a rapid pace and to provide the data and the numbers, the reporting, in a way that fits the business at the time and that where the business is at. So I feel like we've kind of done this accordion thing a lot with expense management, like, hey, push it out, give the power to the people, and let the people be the ones that are managing the expenses for their department or for their team. And then it's like, oh, hey, we need to bring that back in, like get it centralized again. And so I think that has been one of the things that it has kind of surprised me how often and how quickly we need to adapt and be flexible on that side. I think building the business in Guatemala has presented its own challenges with, like, mapping accounts and how do we even do that? And what are the unique tax pieces that come with working in a foreign company? And I mean, all of those pieces, like learning them from the beginning, right? How do we send payments down there? What's the best way? All of those things, right, that we went through and kind of in the growing pains of the earlier years, I think have been challenging, surprising, and fun, actually.
It keeps you on your toes, I bet.
For sure.
So as you were talking about this accordion of span management and giving the power to the people and then taking it back, is that happening, from your observation, is it because you give the power to the people, and then you have a certain number of employees that have been well trained, but then more people come in, you're growing as a company, especially as a smaller company, you're growing, and then it becomes a challenge because the old timers, so to speak, know what to do, but the new people don't. Is that has been a challenge?
Yes, to some degree, it's that. It's like, hey, we had a way we were going to do it, but then we like outgrew that way, right? And we changed, we realized, right? It changes hands. The credit card changes like owners. Then that, you know, that one got cut off and then we're behind on a payment over there. And why weren't we on top of that? Well, that person's maybe not, you know, is that really their job? Is it really their job to be paying these things? Isn't that why we have a finance function? So like, let's bring it back in-house. Let's get it centralized. Let's make sure. But then it's like, well, then how do we provide visibility to the budget owner if we are handling all the invoices that are coming in? Are we doing that piece properly? And then, you know, somebody says, wouldn't this just be easier if I were just paying this and if I were managing this, you know, vendor contract or whatever myself? And so I feel like over the years, it's kind of done a little bit of back and forth as we've tried to manage what's the best option.
And what are some of the challenges that you're currently going through when you're trying to manage all these contracts? And I'm expecting that, you know, you there's a bunch of solutions that you've tried. And obviously there's, and I always say this, there is not 100% solution at any one, unfortunately. You can get it to probably like 90%, but then, you know, the rest of it, you kind of have to muddle through. So what are some of the things that you have tried to manage this?
I will say we've tried limiting the number of people, right? So how many people have their hands in it? Who is it actually? We use a framework that I think we talked about briefly before, but it's AARC, right? Authority, accountable, responsible, and consulted. And so that has been one framework that has helped us, like, okay, where does the decision-making power lie in the authority? And I don't even know where that framework came from. I'm sure it's from a book that we've leveraged somewhere along the way. But then who's accountable to make sure that it's getting done, right? Then who's responsible, who's actually doing the work to make sure that the work is happening and being executed? And if there's a decision that needs to be made, who are we consulting? Who are we bringing in to sit at the table to make that decision? And that has been the case with budget ownership for us. And using that framework has been really helpful. Mm-hmm. What happens is sometimes we get outside of it. I think what happens a lot of times is when you have a process in place that you feel like is working and it's moving, then you start to, complacency starts to creep in. And you get away from the process because it's like, well, we know what we're doing. Why do we have to follow the process? Or, well, you know, you take a shortcut here or there. And eventually, you know, it's like that little degrees of, mm-hmm. of getting away from something. And eventually you find yourself really far away from where you're supposed to be. And usually when you figure that out, it's because you've run into a major hurdle or a problem. And you're like, well, how did this even happen? Like, isn't the process back here? We should have caught this like long ago. And so that's, you know, I think that also comes back to the more people, the more cooks you have in the kitchen, like when you're talking about budget ownership, the easier it is for those things to happen and the harder it is to like keep the rein on it. So there's that balance between like giving authority and ownership to people, but also like having oversight and a proper amount of oversight to all of it.
And especially when it comes to decentralized forecasting and budgeted as well, that becomes challenging because now instead of having a centralized function that does all of this, you have all these other people that are doing it and they can be doing it basically how they want to be doing it. And then they're on their own deadlines. Yes, you give them the deadlines, but, you know, people generally push back and all these other things. And what have you seen that worked well so far when it comes to making sure that people are accountable across these different teams when it comes to decentralized budgeting and forecasting?
I think we're really good at pulsing and rhythms. So we have very established rhythms weekly, monthly, quarterly, annually that, I mean, we've spent a lot of time creating the framework for how we will pulse and what we will do in those meetings. So I think that has been super helpful. So to your point, like when you, I think if you don't give people clear instructions yep. and you don't hold people accountable, then it's really easy that you get away from it. But when you're clear about what it is why we're doing it, what it is we're doing, the timeline expectations, like all of those pieces, I do think that people show up and they show up well. It's usually poor communication or lack of transparency or something when somebody doesn't show up in the right way. So, but to your point, people think about it differently and everybody has a different like nose for the numbers, I would say. And so it, you know, sometimes you'll get it in a format that's like, that's not the format we needed it. And they're like, well, but then, you know, there's always a reason why, or, and so I think knowing when you go decentralized that you're going to have to address all of those issues, right? The timeline, it's going to take you longer. If you're building it from the bottom up and you've got more people involved, the timeline, it does take longer. You got to get started and you got to make sure that you put that in your process that it's going to be. And then you got to hold people accountable to the deadlines. So we start early, very early in our annual process. For example, we typically are starting on the finance side, like already in July with some templating and getting moving. We're having kickoff meetings probably at a high level, probably already in August. And then we're like down into the kickoff at our team level, September, October. So yeah, I think we have a pretty long schedule, but.
And when is the time that you actually have it completely finalized? Is it October, November time?
So typically our final is mid-December is usually when we're like, okay, it's stamped in. But we're at we're talking the small details that get ironed out between probably, you know, late November and mid-December when it's like finalized. You know, a couple of scrappy things that are sitting out there that we got to go dig up and figure out where we want to land it. But yeah.
How about on the forecasting sides? Are you doing a monthly forecast, a quarterly forecast? What is your cadence for the forecast? Are you doing those?
Yeah. So from a full like P&L forecast, we are doing that monthly. But from a revenue perspective, it is a weekly pulse. Yes. And it is, we're having a lot of conversations around that as well. Like, is that the right cadence? Is it too often? Are we spending too much time because it's quick turns sometimes? It's like, well, if I had information from yesterday, is it late already? Like, is it old information already? And what good is it doing us to like compile it all? So you have to certainly weigh that. But we have found that we're able to react. The faster you pulse, the faster you can react. And that's something that I think being a young company and like growing, we've done pretty well, I think. But I think a lot of companies pulse too slow, to be honest. I think you have to pulse quickly, and it doesn't have to be, you know, these mega meetings. Like, we leverage the book scaling up quite a bit. Traction, EOS, like there's some other frameworks out there, but a lot of these like meetings are like, hey, a quick stand up in the morning. For years, we did stand ups every day. Then we had, you know, leadership meetings and we're reading metrics and we're like calling it out and people are accountable to their number. And I think that pulsing gets rhythms ready and gets people in the groove of like, what's happening in our business.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially having that pulsing cadence that makes sense. And as you've said, you know, the company goes through a lot of transitions, especially when you're growing and when you're a young company. What worked a year ago might not work right now. So you have to look at your processes. You have to look at how you're doing things. But a part of that is also making sure that the team is aligned during all these changes and these different transitions. How do you manage that?
I think it comes down to transparency and communication. And that's like a very, you know, high level general answer to that question, but I don't know any other answer. Like, you have to communicate, you have to have the channel to communicate, you have to know where you're doing that at. So I mentioned we pulse a lot, but we also know where we're pulsing. Like, we know which teams are getting together and we have the meetings like in the right order stacked, right? So it's like, hey, we're all going to go have our team meetings. We're bringing those to the next meeting. That's filtering and funneling to the next meeting, so that cascade and the waterfall, both directions, is happening in the right orders. And then we have, you know, predetermined agendas. So it's like, hey, what are we hitting on? Where we try to, you know, be personal as well. Like, what are the personal wins, you know, that you had? What did your work wins for the week? Hey, what are you grateful for? Like, we try to incorporate all that stuff, even down, you know, at every level, really. And then, you know, okay, here's the metrics we're going to look at every single time. We know what questions we've got to answer. And then you know, what are the other topics that we're going to bring in? So we have structured agendas that facilitate and help us to communicate properly, make sure that we're not missing, you know, there shouldn't be gaps missing, that communication's not flowing. Of course, you know, we're not perfect. Every business is doing, you know, there's problems everywhere, but I think it ultimately comes down to communication and transparency and communication. Like, we're not sitting in siloed corners having these conversations. Like, we're doing this together. We're all in it together.
And are there any specific metrics that have been very helpful for you and your team as you're looking through these pulsing meetings?
We've broken it down and we've gone through definitely, like, I would say eras, right, of different metrics that have been important. I think for us, cash has always been like the cash flow forecast. So we haven't always talked a lot about like a cash flow statement, like historically, how did we get to where we are? Like, we are very much future focused. Where are we headed? And being, again, like, growing with this company since we were much smaller, cash has been, you know, cash is king, especially for a privately held. Like, that is so true. I think we learned a lot of really, I personally learned a lot of lessons during COVID when we did a lot of scenarios that were, you know, I don't know that I ever would have had quite the, I'm going to call scare, but like, I think it opened my eyes to how quickly it can go if, you know, a couple of different things happen, right? So it was like, I don't think we'd ever run really dire scenarios like we ran all the scenarios during COVID. I'm sure everyone was doing it, right? But I think cash has been the, like, probably the big one for us, like, keeping track of. If I had to pick one, that's one. But of course, like, we're a consulting company, so it's like, hey, closed won opportunities, which is our POs, right? Like, where are we at with that to build? Utilization is one that is, for a consulting company that sells people's time, we were not really focused on utilization, honestly, for a lot of years. And we kind of prided ourselves on not being focused on, so heavily focused on utilization, because I think a lot of our really good consultants and analysts that were coming from, you know, the big four or whatever, and they're coming from places where it was like so drilled into them that you got to log their hours and we got to have the utilization rate. And it was like, I think they were in a little bit of like overload. I was like, okay, let's focus on margin. Let's worry about being profitable. Let's worry about driving in cash. And let's take a little bit of this like spotlight off of utilization. Well, it has come back. I think we've tipped the scales too far to some degree. So now we're back. We're talking about utilization again. And what does it mean for our business? And it's important when you're selling people's time. Utilization is important.
The good thing here is that, you know, you have people that understand the importance of utilization in the business already because they came from that type of background before. The hardest part is what I have seen is when you don't have that type of mentality and you need to track this as a metric, and there is just not a culture in the business to really track that time to see, you know, how people are utilized. So that's a great thing that you already have that basically pre-built into the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we're also kind of touched on this, like, lean thinking and how do we make sure that we are running lean. In your experience as a CFO for the last, you know, these few years, what do you think has been the biggest source of waste in the financial processes that you've had so far?
I think the biggest waste comes when we are not aligned, when we haven't built it right from the start, right? When we're not aligned, we haven't communicated properly and clearly and made sure that everyone's on board. Like, we ought to get on board so that we're all pulling together. And that's when the waste happens. It's like we're spending time either because we have an inefficient process and we're all doing our separate things, and then like bringing it together. Like, we've wasted so much time in that because we're not one to start with. Yep. Or we've built on a process that is like, we put a Band-Aid. I mean, honestly, when you're growing so fast, you put Band-Aids around, right? Like, you can't get to everything. And so like, that's, you just lose. Eventually you get to the place where like, we have got to build this thing correctly from the start. We got to go back to like the foundation and get the foundation right. And I think that, you know, that's where you waste a ton of time when you're just putting band-aids on solutions.
Do you have an example of a process or that you have had where you started putting band-aids on and you realize, hey, this thing is now becoming like a mummy. We're putting band-aid after band-aid after band-aid. We're going to have to revamp all of this.
Yes.
Do you have an example where you did that?
I think by far our best example is probably our cash collections process. So when I started, you know, I like to joke with our new hires that like, I'm thankful I'm still here, but I think we had an AR days of 52 days. We had net 15 was our standard payment terms. And our AR days were sitting at 52. And it was for a million different reasons, right? Like it was taking us a long time to get our invoices out. So start there. Then it was like, we didn't have the right contact. So we're sending the invoice. When we finally do get it out, it's going to the wrong person, you know, too many times. We haven't provided all the information that they need. They don't have our W-9, so they can't get us set up or, you know, name it. Like all of these things were happening. And it was like, you'd throw band-aids on the solutions. And like I said, cash, I think we put a flag in the ground and said, okay, we're going to get this straight, because this is a big issue, right? We had a lot sitting in AR that shouldn't have been there, and we needed to revamp really the whole process. And we read Scaling Up, you know, shout out to my man Vern Harnish, because that book has been very helpful for us. So we read that, you know, we got inspired, I think, by some of the stuff in there. We're like, all right, let's get after this. So we revamped how we invoiced. We took a look at the whole process, like start to finish. When are we touching the client? What are we doing? So it starts with sales, right? Making sure that we collected the right information so that we had the right contact. So we're not sending it to the wrong person. We had the invoicing email that we needed, right? We went to like a welcome, hey, as soon as it goes closed one, right? Like now we're making contact. We're sending the welcome package. We're sending them the W-9 up front. We're sending them the ACH information because, oh, hey, we also don't want that check. We don't want that paper check. We'd like to be in Sweden and get electronic payment, please. So can you send us that? And so like, let's make it as easy as we can. Make sure that we've got the proper information on the invoice, that they have it in advance, that we're like, hey, just want to introduce myself. You know, I'll be sending you the invoices. Want to make sure I got my contact right. And then starting to pulse immediately in the process before the invoice was due. So we backed up the like whole communication process a lot. You know, it used to be like it was like, hey, try to get the invoice out on time. Hope that it went to the right place. Hope that they have received it. Don't know. It's 7 days past due. Maybe I should reach out. And then it's like, they don't even have the invoice. Oh, they don't have the invoice. They never got it. You know, we're not set up in their system properly. So all of those things, right, are just adding and adding and adding to how long is it taking us to actually collect cash. And so we are a company of consultants. So we ran a project, you know, we had a discovery and design on our cash process. We had a Gantt charts. We did the whole shebang. And it was really super helpful to get it down. So, I mean, we're sitting right now somewhere around 30 on mostly 30, net 30. So we're really close. We're far below industry standard, industry benchmarks on AR days. And that's one of the things that I'm really proud of that we've managed to really change the script on over the years.
That's amazing. Congratulations on that. You know, there's definitely a benefit of being your own client.
Yes.
And implementing it.
I was like, oh, this is how it feels.
Yeah. Is there any particular technology that you would say that boosted the efficiency of your finance team as well as you were going through this?
Well, we are a Salesforce partner. That is what we do. So we have certainly leveraged the power of the platform to a large degree. So we today have an integration. We run our financials through QuickBooks. Which when I got to Torn, I was like, man, I can't believe we're on QuickBooks. Like in my head, QuickBooks was very like small business. Like there's no chance we can be sitting on QuickBooks. And then I got using it, the pricing and the functionality. I'm like, oh, this actually works, right? Like we can actually do this. So we were able to do an integration between our Salesforce instance and our QuickBooks, which is where we're doing, where we're holding all the financials, which was super helpful. That is one of the tools that we The integration, I think, has been super helpful. So we create the invoices inside of Salesforce. We push them to QuickBooks, and that, you know, made our process a lot quicker. Yep. Also gave a lot of visibility inside Salesforce, and because all of our consultants and our project management, everything is happening in the Salesforce platform. And so it's really just the financials that are over here. And it gave that visibility to our teams as well. So they can also help, you know, they hop on a status call with a client and they're able to see the data and help us drive it in if it's something's outstanding, or, you know, talk about that too.
So are you able to integrate Salesforce with QuickBooks as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That there's efficiency right there.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, you talk about Salesforce and QuickBooks. These are all SaaS companies. Are you currently having a lot of SaaS cost in the business? And how are you managing that, if you are?
Yeah, is there a company that's not right now? I feel like probably everyone is dealing with it. We are technology people, right? And my company is a bunch of tech people. So we do have a tendency, I think, to like that shiny new tech thing that's out there. Mm-hmm. And hey, there's a tool for this, and hey, there's a tool for that. We do have an in-house team that is like managing our own tech stack. And that is, I think, super helpful and needed. I think you've got to know your tech stack, because there's a lot of overlap in what tools can do today. And if you don't know, then I think it's really easy that it just quickly gets out of control by adding and adding and adding. I mean, it's happening, you know, personally, like streaming services. I mean, the same thing is happening, right, in business. It's like, yep. Okay, well, this one is great. Oh, but it's missing this one little thing I want to do. And like, well, let me just grab that too. And then before you know it,
they're replicating 10, 20 of them doing similar things.
Yeah, a monster. And you've got an architecture on your own side that it just doesn't make sense. Yep. So I think keeping track of that is important. Somebody's got to have authority to do it and responsibility to do it.
And how are you currently keeping track of that?
Our IT team is in charge of managing the stack. We do a quarterly pulse with our executive team to like, hey, here's their initiatives. And if there's a new tool or something that they're trying to implement, or something that we think is needed for security reasons or whatever, that'll come up in a quarterly pulse or quarterly rhythm with us of like, hey, here's the initiatives that we have that we think are valuable. Here's what we're doing. And the constant, like, I mean, you got to rent out just like you do at home. You got to rent out the closet. You got to rent out the tech stuff. And so they're constantly going back to you, I think, in our own systems, right, to clean house so that you have good data, but also so that you're not in this, you know, tangled web of tools that aren't really helping.
Yeah. And just adding to the cost versus, you know, having a clean set of things that you're really using. And you're getting your money's worth.
Yeah.
So, Carrie, this has been a fabulous conversation, but, you know, the last question is going to touch on the SaaS cost. And what piece of advice would you give to other fellow CFOs when they're trying to manage these costs when it comes to SaaS and cloud services?
If I am talking to small business owners or CFOs of smaller businesses, and I had to say one thing, I would say, we have a core value that we say we write in white text here at Torrent, and it's scrappy. I think you got to get scrappy, especially when you're funding yourself, when you're trying to get to sustainable growth, and when you're trying to scale and grow. There are tools and systems out there that are less expensive that can do the job, right? And I think being scrappy, especially early on, is going to allow you the opportunity and the time to find and figure out what it is you really need, so that you can place value on what it is you really need, and then make a choice that adds value to your business and not just handcuffs you and gets you in a sticky situation where you're locked in. So I think I would say start scrappy, make sure you understand what you actually need, and then look for the value in the tools.
That's great advice, Carrie. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.